The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. Hope you had a great weekend. We are going to have Steve Wyche with us from the NFL Network. NFL Total Access has turned into a little bit like Inside the NBA. I don't mean a lot of jokes and laughs, but I mean they are willing to address really strong issues with voices that aren't just the usual ones that you will see on television. I mean, they've had White House correspondent from CNN. They've had people on the political end, along with NFL players, all in the last couple of weeks. We have yet to hear from Jerry Jones on anything that Roger Goodell said. Yet to hear from him. As promised, Steve Wyche joins us now from the NFL Network Total Access. And I mentioned this earlier in the show and have talked about over the last week or so. This has turned into must-see TV because roundtables involving the NFL usually are about what backup left tackle might do this or what free agent might do that. Or we might go into the Rooney Rule a little bit. But, man, Steve Wyche has just put these roundtables together, and with his crew, too, producers and everybody, that are must-see television because they're dealing with judicial and police reform. They're dealing with social justice. There's players, there's politicals, there's all sorts of people. And I'm so pleased that you're able to join us for a few minutes. Just talk about what the last few weeks has been like for you in NFL Total Access.
Well, look, as we know, you know, everything that's kind of set this in motion, what's happened in our country, you know, George Floyd was kind of the tipping point, but, you know, these are the same things that Colin Kaepernick was telling us about 4 years ago, and, you know, Tommy Smith and John Carlos were telling us in 1968. So, you know, the network said, let's, you know, we know our players are part of this young generation. We know our coaches are having to deal with these players. So let's have some open and frank conversations on where sports intersects with society. And as you know, as sportscasters, that's often been a no-no. But it's just too hard, especially while everyone is home from this COVID-19, to not really have the honest conversation, because we know this impacts players. We saw, like, the Arizona Cardinals. Patrick Peterson helped make the video that triggered Roger Goodell to have the response video. And so it's been amazing because, like you said, we've had Richard Sherman and Chris Long and Jim Trotter on one panel really talking about the NFL needing to acknowledge some of the same thing that police departments need to acknowledge or other companies need to acknowledge in terms of, you know, diverse voices and the impact that they have. And we've had other panels where, like you mentioned, we had one last week with Michael Eric Dyson and Eddie Glaude Jr., you know, people who you see a lot on CNN or Fox News or MSNBC, along with players talking about societal issues, judicial reform. So a lot of it is highlighting some of the ills, and a lot of it is highlighting some of the solutions. And these are going to continue. And it's just, and I'm just so proud that the NFL has allowed these conversations to take place on our network.
Have you had any feedback from above saying, hey, we sign your paychecks, back off?
Not once. I mean, like, I'll tell you this, that's never happened. And as look, as a media arm of the league, we aren't going to do investigative journalism on Spygate or right, something like that. We'll report the news. But on this one, it has been let's go. And a lot of the conversation, if you watch, has been critical of the league. It has taken owners to task, and it has taken our employers to task at the network for the lack of diversity in its newsrooms and in its offices. So, you know, those are things that, you know, in most places are a no-no. You don't go public with the in-house laundry. And they've allowed us to expose a lot of the stains that they're hoping, you know, to try to clean up now that everyone's kind of found a conscience and understands it's time to do the right thing, and it is time to bring some certain things to light, and that's acknowledging some of the things that are going on in our own house.
What are you hearing from players around the league since Goodell's statement? I'm hearing skepticism all over the place still. It's let's see, we'll see. What are you hearing?
Same thing. Same thing. It's, you know, look, a lot of the people, especially the guys who were in that video, like Tyrann Mathieu, I think it was DeAndre Hopkins, a couple people were like, that was a good start. But now let's see the follow through, because we heard Roger Goodell for the first time not wait for the owners to give him direction. He's saying, follow me. But where are the owners' voices? We have not heard those. So I think that's why you have so much legitimate skepticism going on. And in large part, it's not just that. It's just the history of what's happened in the NFL. At the same time, the league says we're going to give millions of dollars to help with social programs. They come up with a policy saying that you cannot protest during the playing of the national anthem. Now, that policy has never been enforced, but it's the steps and the means which ownership and the league has shown in the past about how they've treated these issues don't jibe with the message right now, which looks authentic and looks sincere. But again, the cynicism, I think, is well-deserved. And we'll see a couple months from now, you know, if everything is legitimate as it looks right now.
Yeah, I would have liked to have heard Jerry Jones say something within 24 hours. Like, that's a voice that, in my space, I would just like to hear a response after Roger Goodell said what he said, because of the weight that he carries and just that brand.
Well, and a lot of owners, but especially Jerry Jones, because he's been very outspoken. He let his players know that if you protest during the playing of the national anthem, that we don't have a place for you here, or there could be issues. And he still, you know, his silence right now, I think, has told a lot of players, fans, skeptics, whomever, exactly where he stands. And look, that's how the owners have been in a lot of these cases, is the bottom line is a little bit more important than our players' feelings, because players come and go, but our partnerships with these businesses or our relationships with these sponsors are much more long-lasting. So that's why when you look at David Tepper of the Carolina Panthers, who severed ties with their longtime security agency after their CEO made a very flippant kind of remark about the protest and Black Lives Matter, he's saying, we'll find someone to replace you. And rarely have we seen owners in any pro sports league say, we can do without you. Can you do without us? And it's going to be interesting to see how many owners are willing to take that step, because so far, David Tepper seems to be the only one to really take that one, you know, the Carolina Panthers, at large of a lead.
What about what's going on with the Cardinals and DeAndre Hopkins and Isaiah Simmons and Clemson? Your view on that, and what is that a panel waiting to happen?
Ooh, that's a great one. Thanks for giving me the idea. I'm going to give you executive producer credits on that. Look, if they're willing to talk about it, you know, that'd be interesting, because, you know, we had Chris Long on. You know, Chris Long has his own podcast and things on. He was very critical of their old head coach, Dabo Swinney. He said, I heard Dabo talk for 6 minutes, but I didn't hear him say anything. And so, you know, you have these players, you know, Isaiah Simmons and DeAndre Hopkins, you know, Dabo and what's going on at Clemson and the situation there. But at the same time, we heard Clemson's quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, become one of the first voices speaking in support of his teammates and speaking in support of these peaceful protests. So, this is where this young energy, you know, for this whole movement we're seeing around the country is really intriguing to me. You know, are they going to keep that energy 3 months from now when they're back on the football field? But now that you put it, I'd like to get that panel together. Again, I'll have you on to be part of the conversation as well.
Jump on in on that. Steve, before I get you out of here, Colin Kaepernick, what is going to happen in the next few weeks? Is it going to be met with a real tilt of the head saying, are they really signing him to compete? I sat over here and watched Blaine Gabbert, no offense to Blaine Gabbert, but was very vocal and said, why is Colin Kaepernick not here 3 years ago? And we have to put up with quarterback play that just wasn't very good, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, and moving forward with Colin Kaepernick, it's going to be very interesting. Of course, there was the legal settlement, which is why I don't know if you'll hear the NFL come out and apologize to Kaepernick, because then they might be saying, we did collude to what he's accused us of. But if someone's going to offer him a job, we'll see. I mean, look, I don't have a lot of faith in it. If someone does, you know, would he view it as being patronizing, or would he view it as a legitimate chance? And either way, would he take the opportunity to say, I'm going to go out and still try to play the game that's been denied that I love, that's been denied for me the game that I love? So we'll see. I mean, you see most teams have their slots filled right now, but Cam Newton's still out there. But I don't have a lot of faith. Teams have had 3 years to do this, you know, to hire Colin Kaepernick, and they haven't. So I don't have any faith that that's going to come through right now.
Last question. What has this done for you? Has it re-energized you? Not that you were tired. You're doing your thing. You're reporting. Right. But you're in a space that you haven't been in before. What's this done for you on a daily basis?
Well, on a daily basis, it's allowed me to kind of go into my wheelhouse. I'm a news junkie. I'm someone who's covered some of the biggest stories and led the way on some of the biggest stories in sports. Colin Kaepernick being one. I was the first one to spot him not standing for the national anthem, the Michael Vick dog fighting case. When I did the NBA, Michael Jordan, you know, coming to joined the Washington Wizards when I worked at the Washington Post. So I'm back into my investigative, deep thinking mode. And at 54 years old, you know, we see this world in a whole different light. I've got three sons in their 20s who've gone through some of the things people are protesting. So it's allowed me to also bring in those experiences and to have conversations that I think are deeply important for coaches, owners, fans, players. Trust me, not a lot of people want to hear about this. We're hearing a whole lot. I'm done with the NFL right now. That's another thing. Yeah, I believe it when I see it.
Stick to sport.
Stick to sports. It's impossible right now. You can't stick to anything right now. But I love it. I think it's something. My whole job as a journalist is to bring the best and most out of people intellectually. So that's why moderating these panels, to try to get people to have these raw discussions, to make them think in ways they haven't thought before, so we can educate, has really been something I've taken a lot of pride in. And again, I'm glad I've got the platform to be able to help elevate and amplify some of these other voices who can really maybe help all of us get through this and become our better people.
Well, it's really must-see TV, as I said off the top. And I appreciate your time and your insight, Steve. Thanks.
Thanks so much for having me.
So there's quite a few things that are happening in sports while we've just been sitting here today. Ezekiel Elliott tested positive for COVID-19. I have to believe that this is going to be something that we'll be hearing from with players as tests become more readily available. He is in good shape, according to what we see on Twitter. A really interesting story, Eric, happened here just while we're talking with Steve Weiss. By the way, it was terrific, so good get on tracking him down. The Broncos, according to Sports Business Journal, the Denver Broncos and FanDuel have agreed to a multi-year team sponsorship, the first of its kind for an NFL team, after the league relaxed its guidelines for sportsbook space back in February. So this comes as no surprise. This comes at a time where the league is going to need revenue because a lot of their corporate sponsors are done or impacted. When you have 40 million Americans that have filed for unemployment, you're going to have spaces that they don't have the advertising budget that they once had. And I think ultimately this is going to lead to, when we go to an NFL game, I'm not saying this year or even next year, at some point, and you like to go to NFL games, right? I'm not putting words in your mouth.
I do like going to NFL games.
Yeah, so at some point, I think this will happen with college at some point, and the NBA may be the first one on it. You're going to park your car, you're going to walk in, and when you walk in, after they scan your ticket or however they do their point of entry, there's going to be a gambling machine right there in front of you. And you're going to walk up to it just like an ATM. And it might be a fingerprint, it might be a card, and you're going to say, I'm going to put $20 on the Cardinals to beat the game, the team that I'm coming here to watch play. I'm going to put $20 on the Cardinals to beat Green Bay. And then you might even go to a point where I'm going to do the over-under on the number of catches that DeAndre Hopkins is going to have versus Christian Kirk. And I think you're going to be able to gamble like crazy at sporting events. That is the next big thing. That is already happening in Europe. It's already happening over there. Why are we behind the times? Why are we so sanctimonious about gambling? You know, our buddy Jimmy Vaccaro, who we've had on for the last 8 years, it's his business has been impacted, but it's going to come back, I think, even stronger. I really do. Would you gamble at games if you had the ability to?
Sure. I know the AAF, Brad, tried to do this with an app in their small half-season run a couple of years ago. And a couple of my friends do in-game betting off of other sites, off apps. They're not necessarily at the games, but if they wanted to bet at the games, all they have to do is pull out their phone and do it. So it's just the next step. And like you said, I mean, these NFL teams are going to try to figure out ways to get the revenue back to where it was. And they're probably going to be a little bit less selective with advertisers as they have been in the past. And it's crazy to think, like, when you started this venture and I joined you, it was pretty much taboo to talk about gambling, and fantasy football was just like this little neat little thing on the side. And both of those over the last 8 years have absolutely exploded.
No, they really have. So this came up today. This will be huge. This will be something that will be if you don't want to go watch the game, I don't know about you, but I've been hearing from a lot of my friends that are on the conservative end of things that support Trump, that if there's any kneeling at all, they're done with the NFL. We're not going to watch. We're going to boycott. And of course, I call BS on that.
And there will be kneeling. I mean, yeah, there will be. That isn't even something that we need to discuss.
Right. So this will be the other hook for them is, okay, turn the game on 2 minutes after the opening kickoff. Hey, man, I got to put 5 on this. I got to put 10 on that. There's going to be that, you know, the whole buildup of like, oh, my gosh, they're kneeling. What are we going to do? That's not going to impact that many people, I don't believe.
You always give great insight on this from your TV days in the past. How do you feel the networks are going to shoot the anthem? In terms of, are they going to show it? Are they not going to show it? Is the NFL basically going to say, hey, let's just start at the coin toss and go from there?
Well, they already do. So,
I know, but with Kaepernick, I know. It started a completely different trend during that year or so that he started kneeling, and then it kind of went away, and it's going to be back now. So
you could be, I'll take it on the players' side of things. You're head of the players' union, and you're a player that feels like he does not want to kneel. And so you're standing. Now, are the TV cameras going to show standing player, kneeling player, standing player, kneeling player? Because, guys, this is Eric knows this. When you guys watch games, it is pretty much scripted the first few minutes. I think it's all scripted. When the power went out the Super Bowl like 10 years ago in New Orleans, those guys had no idea what to do. They can't ad-lib to save their lives. It's just how it is. I got to read what's in the prompter. I am Ron Burgundy. That's what we do. Okay, so... And that's not a criticism. That's just how they're baked.
A lot of the opens, Brad, as you know, are taped. Most of them are taped.
Yeah, so they're taped up.
You know, the open starts and the talent and the play, the talent and the analysts come on camera. Like that's not large. Not live. That's been recorded probably an hour ago.
Yeah. So let's say that you're J.J. Watt. And J.J. Watt said this weekend, or Baker Mayfield, both of them came out and said that I'm going to be kneeling.
Yep.
Okay. And so are they going to do the tight shot on J.J. Watt, which they would do whether he was standing, kneeling on his stomach with his legs in the air, doing a yoga pose? They're still going to do a tight shot on J.J. Watt because he's J.J. Watt. They're not going to show the backup left tackle. They're not. Unless he happens to be in the shot alongside of J.J. Watt. If it's Larry Fitzgerald, they're going to want to get Larry Fitzgerald on camera. There's certain brands of certain players. And so how it's scripted out by the NFL, is Roger Goodell willing to take the heat that is going to come when this is politicized? Like Steve Weiss and I are talking about this. This is going to be a political topic. And the political topic is going to be the national anthem, standing or sitting by NFL players. It's going to be. Whether we like it or not, the president already tweeted his opinion directed at Roger Goodell, who expressed his opinion. It's only going to be a matter of time. And if games are played, then you're going to have to, if you're the NFL, that's why having Steve on and what they're doing right now is so groundbreaking, because they're taking shots at the league. And their checks are signed by the league.
On the NFL network. They're taking shots at the NFL.
Yes. And it's great because it needs to happen. The other thing too is just in sports right now. Like I watched golf this weekend. I watched some players just gag away an opportunity yesterday afternoon. So it was fun to be able to watch sports and then talk about sports. NASCAR had a very good weekend again. Denny Hamlin was in the rain. He won his fourth race, and he was a little chippy, a little pissy after the race was over. So it was fine. At the other side of the coin, there's a read by Thomas Boswell. Thomas Boswell, Eric, is one of my favorite baseball writers across the globe. He writes for the Washington Post. He calls no BS when there's no BS. So Thomas wrote today, and this made me think of Robert Sarver. Thomas Boswell, quote, in the last 6 years, the average Major League Baseball team has increased in value by more than $1 billion. $811 million 6 years ago to $1.8 billion now. Players' salaries have increased 1% in the last 4 years. 1%. Owners' revenue has increased 15% in the last 4 years. Okay? So the value of a team, this is my Robert Sarver line. So the value of a team, even if you make zero profit, doubles every 6 years. Now, I know we all are sick and tired of players and owners on this baseball front. They've missed their window of opportunity to start on July 4th. I've never seen so much grab ass going on in my life. Guys trying to figure out and run into doorways. It's like the Three Stooges on every corner, okay? And the players will sit there. Trevor Bauer can go on and on all day long about how smart he is. He's not on the field. And that's all fans want to see. They don't want to hear this stuff. But when you just do the pure dollars, like Robert hasn't been to a playoff game in 10 years, and the value of the Suns has quadrupled. Baseball's in the same boat. But for the owners to have their pockets increased by 15% and the players 1%. I always believe the players get the bad side of it.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And you mentioned, Brad, that fans are just going to stop caring about the NFL a certain percentage, depending on what happens with the anthem. I know some people that I spoke to over the weekend are just pretty much done with baseball.
No, they are.
They're just like, what? Like, why am I even getting excited over this? You know, they just can't get out of their own way. Why can't they figure it out when all the other major sports have?
Yeah, no, that part of it's tough, too. I know we have David Hines here in a couple minutes, but beyond that, the NBA is now in this space where they're on again, they're off again. They're on again, they're off again. And that's going to piss people off. So I just, like, it's great to have golf and it's great to have NASCAR, but I want to have balls that are bigger than a little white pill being chased around and cars 6 inches apart from each other going 200 miles an hour. I kind of want to have a round ball. I kind of want to have a football. Today, Arizona State and U of A are bringing back 20 football players today. I sat in a conference call with Ray Anderson on Friday, and he said, we have no idea. We're not going to put our athletes in harm's way. We don't care what other conferences are doing. We're not going to do it. We can't predict if we're going to have a season or not. I know we could lose a lot of money. I know we could lose a lot of sports. I do think it's really interesting they're bringing back football players first. It's not like the girls' volleyball team is being brought back today. And they're the same sport, the same in terms of time of year. Football's got to get back because, man, it's no offense, girls' volleyball. I had $2 and played volleyball. Doesn't bring in any money. So of course they're going to bring football back. And on Friday, Houston tried to come back, University of Houston, and they had to shut it down. Iowa State, 10 players positive for COVID, 10 of them. So this thing is starting to really rear its ugly head. And David Hines on the other side is going to talk about high school because we do that too. What does it look like with high school? Because this coming week is stage two for several of these high school districts. And a couple ADs had said, I think we're going to go back to stage one or zero or just shut it all down again. If that happens, I don't see a season. Like, this is a big week. It's a really big week. So I have David Hines on the other side. Stay with us. All right, as promised, David Hines is with us from the AIA, the executive director of the AIA. It has come to my attention here over the last couple of weeks. I am a high school dad. I've had 4 kids go through high schools here in Arizona. I've basically been in the space for the last 20 years. So when I see things on a macro level of everybody's focused on the NFL, it's like, well, guys, this also impacts Ray Anderson over at Arizona State, Dave Hickey at U of A, and it impacts David Hines and all these high school coaches too. It's not like COVID-19 is just around an NFL team. So to that end, last week, some high school districts started working out, just distancing, showing up, doing like 40 minutes of being apart and stretching and so on and so forth. Some like to go on social media and show that they were wearing 7-on-7 helmets or whatever to, I don't know why, but they were. So I just felt like it's time to get David on here just to see where we're at if alternative calendars are being discussed, this whole trend of players being shopped from other states coming here, and what does that look like? So as that is the backdrop, here's the executive director, David Hines of the AIA. How are you?
I'm doing great, Brad. Thanks for having me on.
No, I appreciate you coming on, David. I want to start the conversation with what, from your office, things look like right now in Arizona and a level of optimism, pessimism about sports starting on time for those athletes in high school in August when school comes back in late July.
Well, Brad, it's really a great question. There's probably more optimism that we would like to get back to some type of activity, get our kids back on the courts or the fields to participate, to work together. You know, the challenge is we just don't know what the future holds. And we may have plans set in place to begin on time, but once we get close to that time, there may be some direction from the governor, from the local CDC, the health departments that make us, or we have to look at some alternative at that point. So we do have a committee that will meet again next week so that the initial plan right now is that with schools going back, again, they're going to be in different formats, but if schools go back, that we will anticipate that as long as schools are in session, that we will continue on with having athletic teams, taking precautions, doing things a little differently. But if need be, we have some plans B or C if we need to delay the start of the season because schools are a little delayed in getting going or back together. We will consider that. Also, the consideration is what happens if partway through the season we have a big second round of this and the governor or the CDC says, hey, we're going to shut you down again. We have to plan and be flexible in those kind of cases.
We're talking with David Hines, AIA Executive Director. So alternative calendars, you alluded to it without saying it. You do have alternative calendars just based on what is going on as we sit here in middle part of June.
Yeah, we've had some discussions, honestly, that if, you know, it was going to be delayed starting, that, you know, there's always a possibility we could reduce the length of our season. Cut a week off, could take a bye week that we have and shorten that to where we have games or move the schedule up if that may be the case. If it came down to, I know a couple states, California has even looked at if they are told they can't come back until partway through the fall or more towards the winter time, meaning November, December, then they looked at potentially having three seasons where they were all three seasons, but they were only 10 to 12 week long seasons to try to give them some opportunity to have some type of activity. Our thought right now is we're anticipating coming back, but if for some reason we had to shut down some in the fall, we would have to do what we have to do. If there is some type of vaccine, things start getting better after the start of the new year, we're hoping that we don't have to affect the spring season a second time.
Got
That's
it.
Our biggest hope.
Yeah. So you could. We had Greg Byrne on about 6 weeks ago, the athletic director at Alabama, and he intimated that they've got a model out there that they could start their college football season on January 1st and finish it in late March and coincide with March mm-hmm. Madness. Would you go mm-hmm. as far, let's just talk this discussion really about football. Would football be something that you could see being moved all the way into the winter and being played January, February, March? I know it would hurt the dual sport athlete, which I'm a big proponent,
right,
as I believe you are too. Could you see football being pushed that far back?
That's a little bit of a stretch for us, Brad, at the high school space, mainly because of the kids that participate in multiple sports. There are less multi-sport kids maybe at the 5 and 6A level, but if we're down at the 1, 2, 3A and even the 4A level, those kids are multi-sport kids. And we would not want those kids to lose out having to pick one sport over the other, because to tell you the truth, most of their coaches are multi-sport coaches. And that puts a real strain on those schools. So the intent would be to try to have, even if it was shortened, some semblance of a season in the time frame that we typically have those seasons.
David, I want to give it's a hypothetical, but I believe that you've got the people around you, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, from a medical side. And I've had this question asked to me many, many times already by parents. Player tests positive. Does the whole team get quarantined? Does the program have to shut down? Does that player go over to the side and is quarantined? How would that work in talking with your medical professionals at the high school level?
No, that's a great question, Brad. And again, I am not a medical professional, but listen to our sports medicine advisory committee that is made up of all the docs. Their recommendation is that we follow CDC guidelines. And CDC guidelines are, if you are sick or not feeling good or have a fever, do not come to practice or to a game or to school. And then if you are feeling bad, you are staying home, you're keeping yourself away from others. And then if it feels like you're moving into a type of situation that could be COVID, then be tested. And if you do test positive, then the quarantine would take place. And with that, you notify the coach, the school, that I have tested positive, and then the CDC does their checks on contact checks, so they can notify or have people, you know, beware. So really it's more finding out. We wouldn't necessarily quarantine the whole group. It would be basically on individual basis as the CDC recommends.
David Hines with us, executive director of the AIA. All right, I started hearing about a month ago of high school players, daddy ballers, I call them, shopping their kids around Arizona high schools from out of state. These are parents in California. I've heard Chicago and Illinois quite a bit, even up in Colorado. A couple have already come down here and have enrolled. What are you hearing on that front, and would they have to sit at all, or is it just considered they're moving their domicile?
Another great question, Brad. Yes, we have heard some of that. We have transfer rules in place. Those will depend based on the situation that those kids are coming. If their family picks up and moves the entire family here, then and it's their first time enrollment in Arizona, then they would be eligible. If they are not coming with their family, we have different protocols in place where they would have to sit like any other transfer half the year, is where our rules are at currently.
So if I wanted to bring in a running back and send him over to the high school where my son attends, and the AIA would come to my house and check out the situation and see if there's a mom and dad, would they go to that length? Because I've heard that's how it's worked in the past, that you'd want to investigate each and every situation. Is that right?
We do not. We are not an investigative arm, Brad. So let's say a kid is going to, again, he would not be eligible unless they have enrolled in the school, and it is a responsibility of that school as a new student to do their background check and to do all their checking. That parent or group would fill out a 550 form, which is a transfer form, and give them the information so that athletic director knows the situation, and then the individual school AD will make the determination the eligibility of that student.
Got it. It reminds me a little bit, David, of Katrina, when there were Katrina high school kids that were showing up here in the Southeast Valley, mm-hmm. I could speak to directly. And so it's similar to that. I know, completely different situation. Is it just football that you're hearing from, if I could, may ask, or is it all sports?
It's all sports. Mainly right now, the fall, because that's the closest thing to starting. And depending on where you're at, as far as the openness of the state from where these kids are coming from, I think that's a determining factor in considering a move.
Before I get you out of here, how are your emotions on all this? It's got to be when you see test cases go up and the governor holding his addresses, I would think that you have intel, you have people that are talking to you and you're talking with them, but I have to imagine your stress level on this is pretty darn high.
Well, it's certainly not as usual, just, you know, moving on to the next thing. Brad, you're right on. The biggest challenge is not knowing what's ahead and not knowing if it's going to get, you know, exponentially much worse, if things are starting to level out, what can we move to, what can we not move to, you know, 2 months from now. It's going to get here quicker than we thought. So we communicate with our schools. We're really dependent on what the schools are doing. And if schools are coming back, then we have some protocols in place that we can slowly get kids back to activity. But then again, we are a very diverse state, very large. We have kids all over, and different communities are affected differently.
Sure.
So we have some parts of our state that could be 1 month, 2 months, 3 months behind other parts of the state in opening up.
Right.
So that's a challenge. You know, how do we navigate that? I mean, obviously, if people are going to school and we can participate, they will want to do that. Other people won't be able to get back into school, may not be able to participate. Well, then that would be a school decision. And there is no penalty or anything for that other than, you know, it's a delayed availability for the kids. I mean, obviously, they're the ones getting affected the most, but our individual schools and school districts will make those decisions.
Before I get you out of here, what's the response been, not just from your coaches, but also from parents? Unfortunately, I'm running into parents that just want their kids to play. And I'm running into some parents that believe, you know, their belief system is that this is all a bunch of nothing about nothing, and that it doesn't impact their kids, and that they've got it all figured out. I'm being a little bit of a smart aleck on that front, but I'm curious, what are you hearing from your constituents and also from parents?
What I hear, the majority from parents of the information I hear is, please, 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 can we have athletics this fall? That's what I hear on the majority piece of it. I don't really hear a lot from people saying, no, don't do this, no, don't do that. It's more, can we get back? Please don't cancel. Please don't, cancel on us like what happened in the spring. So it's more people would like to get back more than anything else so far. But again, we have to go on what the medical experts and our county health departments and our governor, that is, you know, they're the ultimate authority that can say, no, we're not doing this. The biggest challenge we have is we may be able to get back to some activity, but will we be able to have anybody watch the kids? So fans in the stands, those are all kind of challenges and yet to be determined.
No, I appreciate your time and your insight as always. I know you've got a lot that you're juggling. So thanks again, David.
Brad, thank you very much for having me on.
There's David Hines with us, executive director of the AIA. That is a job that right now, man, the parents where I'm running the parents in some are just like, oh, we got to play. And then there's others that I'd rather err on the side of caution. And I understand both sides, but I'm one of those that says, really, you just want them out there because you think you've got it all figured out, or your belief system says that this isn't really as bad as it seems to be. We're talking about kids here. It's at the end of the day, it's the kids. It's not the parents. All right. That is our show for today. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. Eric Sorensen is always senior executive vice president of nothing or everything, depending on the day. We're going to head over now, work on our TV show on Fox Sports Arizona. Brad Sussmat, Football AZ, with 12 airings minimum per week. We appreciate the partnership with them. And, of course, there's plenty of content on our website if you've not checked it out, sports360az.com. That's sports360az.com. We are self-funded. We do not ask you for a subscription. We don't do that. We have partners that say, we believe in your content. We want to be associated with you. We merely ask, please consider supporting those partners. Without them and without you, we can't do this. We've been doing it for 9 years. It's a lot of fun. Have a great day.